I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the Visually Stunning Movie Podcast, the place to come for movie reviews, along with some extra fun talk about movie-related topics like box office and awards. You can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and basically any place else you can find podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more content. If you like what we do, feel free to share us with your friends, like and leave feedback wherever you listen to us, and let us know what you think. Now, let's get on with the show.
Ryan, new Denis Villeneuve film coming out next Friday.
Yeah.
Long-awaited, delayed, theaters only, theaters and streaming, streaming only, and now it is both. We are back to both of the releases for Dune. Dune is a tough book.
Yeah.
Dune. What have we? We've had the David Lynch film. We've had the, was it one or two mini series?
Well, there was Dune and then Children of Dune. So.
Oh, wow. See, this has been a project that Hollywood has wanted for a long, long time, and they keep coming back to it, trying to get it right. It's actually so old that if you're watching the video portion of this program, you'll see this. This is the Blu-ray copy of Jodorowsky's Dune, which documents the first attempt by Hollywood to adapt Frank Herbert's incredibly dense novel to film. Let's start easy. Could they have picked a better director to try this again?
No.
No. We're in agreement.
You know, maybe. I guess maybe. I mean, or a as suitable.
Right.
As that.
Right.
But better, I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so let's, you know, run down just a couple of the big ones for Denny is, you know, Blade Runner 2049. So he's already into epic sci-fi, and Arrival, which is really cerebral sci-fi, both of which are necessary to try to interpret Dune in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, he's definitely got the chops for it. He put together a cast that is ridiculous. Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides, Rebecca Ferguson as his mother, Zendaya as Sean Young / Chani, Oscar Isaac is Duke Leto Atreides, Momoa, Stellan Skarsgård, Josh Brolin, Javier Bardem, Dave Bautista, David Dasmalchian, Charlotte Rampling. Just start ticking them off. Everyone signed up for this film. But that being said, Dune has a lot to live up to, in terms of what was done, what is considered acceptable, even though the original film has a lot lacking because of when and who it was made by. But the bar is kind of high for Dune. Would you agree?
Expectation. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, what were your expectations going in?
Well, I mean, you know, we know that it's half a film, essentially. We do know that much going in.
I actually didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I knew
that. I knew that as soon as the opening screen popped up.
Sure, because I think it does say part one.
It does say part one.
Yeah. All right. I knew that was the case. But anyway, I think I love when people say something's unfilmable or you can't adapt it.
Right.
Because there's that part of me that says, oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's give that a try.
Right. And kudos to people that try that, because really, I mean,
sure,
any science fiction or fantasy person could go to their bookshelf and probably pull a book off that they would consider 99.9% unadaptable.
Yeah.
For the longest time, The Lord of the Rings was unadaptable.
Yeah.
So
until someone did it.
So yeah. So it's unadaptable.
It's unadaptable. So that's always, I mean, you know, and look, the book is daunting in that it's very politics and economics and there's a lot going on there that can be interesting in text, but doesn't necessarily make for very gripping television or a movie. So yeah. It isn't that people were crazy when they said it was unadaptable. It's just that they hadn't figured out a way to do it. And I don't think David Lynch's version was too terribly bad.
Oh, thank God. I thought we were going to disagree on that.
No, I don't think, I mean, there's, look, is it a great film? No, there's a lot of camp there. There's a lot of things that are absolutely wrong with it. Part of the problem too is the technology of the day. When it was made was probably not quite where it needed to be to do what Lynch was trying to do.
Right.
I think he was very visionary about things, and I don't think that the film he wanted to make could be made in the 80s.
Right.
I think there's stuff in it that they figured out to make it work, and then there's some other stuff that it has always looked a little just too, right, you know, the matte lines, you know, just it wasn't as magical or as believable, I guess. Believable is probably the problem there. It just wasn't as convincing as it needed to be to pull off what he was going for.
Right.
And so because it wasn't believable, that kind of derails this big epic. But I mean, there are parts of the film that are, I think, technically are really quite impressive. So there's, you know, the thing is, I remember watching it, growing up in the 80s, I believe that I saw it in theaters. And then I know that I had seen Lynch's cut, and then I know that I had seen the television cut, which adds a bunch of stuff that kind of tries to explain everything. As a kid, I just took it as it was, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't until I was an adult that, or, you know, at least in later teens or whatever, that discovered that, oh, there were a lot of people who didn't like this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know.
Well, and a lot of those, again, we're talking, you know, the purists, the people that assumed it was unfilmable. So any attempt, of course, is going to fall far short.
And, you know, I mean, to a certain degree, my expectations were different. I hadn't read the book at that point. To me, we were just getting dropped into this. You know, I mean, I mean, it's almost, I think there as kids, and I wish we could all kind of go back. You know, when you sit down for a movie, it felt, at least in the 80s, that, you know, we were getting to see stuff that was really not just magical, but different and exciting. And,
right.
And I wasn't as obsessed with technical specs and things. I just loved the journey. And that's, you know, there's a lot of the fantasy sci-fi stuff that was coming out then that I think was really interesting as a kid. And I say this to all the time, but you kind of always go back the first time you saw something.
Yeah.
And so you kind of go back and you know, I've always had a pretty good feeling about the Dune and seeing Dune and whatnot. So, yeah. I went in with I guess, I mean, I just, I figured that there was a good chance that, you know, it was going to be a solid production. The question would be pacing. It would be how convoluted or how unconvoluted were they able to make, you know, the politics of it.
Right.
You know, and so I don't know that I had. Well, no, I think I had pretty high expectations just based on the people involved.
Yeah. See, now my big concern going in, or my thoughts going in, was that anytime there's a remake or a reboot of something that's liked, a lot, even if it's not loved, if there's a liked property that they come back and revisit, the big concern for me is always is like, how different are they going to make it?
Sure.
And why? Because if they're, you know what I mean? Not just, you know, slight cosmetic changes or, you know, a little bit of technology updates or whatnot, but it's like, are they going to veer completely from what's gone before just to not be that? Or are they going to try to, are they going to evolve it or just change it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think this was, I mean, I don't think this is radically different. I mean, there's stylistically, there's a lot of, I mean, there's certain things that the reason why they look the way they look is that's how they were described in the book.
Right.
And, you know, so yes, was there a possibility that, you know, they could approach this and say, okay, well, they've already seen, you know, the book approximated.
Right.
So let's just do something entirely different. And they didn't do that.
No. And that, like, so that was my big concern, was that when people just run from a property for the sake of running from it. It's,
yeah,
like, you don't have
think
to
that
do that
at all. No, I mean, I think that visually there's a lot of similarities. I don't think it's definitely not a shot for shot or a design for design thing, but the still suits, you know, things.
Yeah.
I mean, certain things look like, well, they're supposed to.
Well, and even a lot of shots of the deserts are really evocative of Lynch's shots.
Sure.
Which is nice, because now if you liked that kind of feel of the deep desert from Lynch, then you'll recognize that. You know, maybe it's just the best way to shoot a desert. I don't know. But in something like this, it's a nice little touchstone to just remind you that, you know, this is the deep desert and this is the way it is. Obviously they do. They update the still suits. Everything's a lot grungier in this one than it was in the first one. Everything's a lot more open, but the designs are really similar. With the exception of the little ships.
Enough. Yeah.
I do love the new ornithopters.
Thought those were pretty cool because,
but no, I did. I liked the ornithopters because now they look like dragonflies. But no, a lot
Which
of the stuff
was
the
awesome.
Yeah, the one of the differences is Lynch's version is actually really claustrophobic. When they're in buildings, everything's really closed, and it's a lot more open and flowy. It feels like in this version, which is fun. You know, so stylistically, he opens the world up a little bit for us. And that, you know, he didn't change the story a lot from the book, or, you know, so it's fairly similar to Lynch's version. You know, there's some cast changes, some gender swaps, all that kind of stuff, but the story is effectively the same all the way through.
Yeah.
Which, you know, so he didn't feel the need to reinterpret the guts, the bones of it.
And it takes a lot of the same beats and things, you know, it's different. You know, a lot of the dialogue different, obviously, but a lot of the way the information is relayed is different as well. But yes, there is a familiarity. If you've seen David Lynch's Dune, you know, you kind of, it doesn't stray incredibly far away from anything that he had done, at least, you know, textual wise.
Right. Which is good. So you mentioned pacing before. This movie's 2.5 hours and it's part one.
Yeah.
I think the longest cut of Lynch's is like 240-ish, somewhere in there.
Yeah, and but that's it. It also should be pointed out that that version he has disowned entirely. So
well,
with the animated stuff and yeah. things, but
so it's two. This one's 2.5. It is very. I will kindly say that the pacing is very deliberate. I think it's very slow in places. And I mean, it looks great cause it's, you know, Villeneuve, but it's sometimes it's just like, we get it. And for me, and I was just like, we need to move this along. There's a lot of lingering melancholia, especially from Timothée Chalamet's Paul Atreides. And a lot of that, you know, I don't know if that's just trying to impose the spiritual aspects of the film, because Dune is a very spiritual story. People will say religious. I just like to go right to spiritual and be done with it. I do like the fact that there's a lot of the Middle Eastern feel to the Fremen, which is, you know, a lot of that was influenced the novel. So it was nice to see it's not a copy paste from the Middle East, but it's definitely that influence is a lot more noticeable in this version. I don't hate this movie. I just don't know if I like it as much as I wanted to coming out.
Yeah. You know, but I'm completely fine with it. With one caveat.
That you need to see part two.
Yes. You know, it's an incomplete drawing. It ends, you know, Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Rings is on its own would not have worked.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, we get to the point where we're just about to do something and...
End of the movie.
Wait.
Yep.
And I don't have an issue with making... I didn't think it was as slow as you thought it was, but it could have been a little more peppy. Yeah. There could be some line delivery and things that came a little more quickly that weren't quite nearly as drawn out, but I mean, it's almost, they're playing kind of a Hamlet sort of mood.
Yeah.
It's just this, I do fear that we won't get the second half for whatever reason. And it's hard for me to really judge this film because it is a half a film.
Right.
And so, or half a story, or how, you know, however you want to look at it. And it's hard for me not to also compare this to what they've done on Apple TV with Foundation,
right?
Foundation is maybe not quite as epic and grand, but it's pretty darn close,
right?
And one thing that they've done in their hour long episodes is make sure that there's just enough action, just enough movement to keep you, you know,
yeah.
Even if you're not really into the intellectual half of it, to keep you entertained. And I think, yes, this the Dune is probably a little more on the intellectual side. There are some action sequences and things, but, you know, it's the adaptation is
right.
it's more... you know, I don't know. I don't necessarily think Foundation is better. It's different.
Yeah.
But it's hard not to kind of see the two of them because Foundation wasn't supposed to be filmable either.
Right.
And I think I think to a degree that they were always right in the sense that the conventional way of making movies once upon a time, Dune was unfilmable.
Right.
But in a modern world where we do have sequels and we can, you know, spend 2.5 hours on the first half of it and 2.5 hours on the second half I think that in itself helps.
Oh yeah. Well, it does. It doesn't hurt,
you know.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Talking about that. Now we talked about Lord of the Rings. And we talked about Foundation. So Foundation knew it was going to be a series. Was it 10 episodes or whatever? And they filmed their season, and now it's there. When they did Lord of the Rings, they knew it was going to be three movies, and they filmed three movies. Yes. Dune knew it was going to be two movies and did not film two movies.
Correct.
And you know, a few of us talked about this after the screening the other day, and it's, you know, well, if this doesn't do gangbusters, does that give the studio an excuse not to greenlight the second film?
And I think it does, and I think it was a complete mistake to do it this way.
Yeah, it's just a horrible. Oh, but wait, who owns this? Warner Brothers?
Yeah, well,
again,
but I don't know if that was Warner Brothers or if that was Legendary or who, you know, where that came in or at what point they knew that it was only. I don't. There's a lot of stuff that I just don't know about, but I do think fundamentally it's an absolute mistake to do half the film and not keep going. It financially, it makes no sense.
Because at the very least, you recoup some of it if you release the second on disc exclusively or streaming exclusively.
Well,
you can always bump up a release of the second film. You don't have to wait a year.
Well, no, and I mean, there is an economic advantage. Everyone's in place. Everyone's in location. Everyone's already there.
Right.
You don't have to work around schedules. You don't have to. I mean, there's a lot of things that just work better. You can shoot, you know, in sequencing. You don't lose whatever rhythm you might have had. It's unfathomable to me that they would do that.
It feels like a self-inflicted wound. If this movie, which is already pretty heady material, and if you're not a fan, the rewatch value on this, you know what I mean? The casual moviegoer is not going to see this two or three times to try to suss out all of the things.
Sure,
but diehards might see it four or five times.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll probably see it at least one or two more times in theaters, to be honest.
I'm debating going to the Monday screening, by the way. So
I would consider it, but I have to be somewhere else.
Out of the country.
So, me going back, this is the worst kind of time of year to be seeing movies twice. Right. Cause we've got so much that we're getting, particularly this year, that we're getting, shoved down our throats, really.
All the catch-up material.
And now with streaming and everything and a part of that, the catch-up is impossible to a certain extent. But that's the part of this that just eats me alive a little bit, that there's a possibility that it doesn't get finished. And I won't ever really get to feel how have a real sense of it. Because at this point, I can say I'm fine with it, but only if there's more.
Right.
And ironically, another movie we're going to probably talk about, I feel the exact same way, and that's Halloween Kills. There's certain endings that work if you know it's not the actual ending.
Right.
Whereas there's certain endings that if that's left open, that's not satisfactory in really any regard.
Yeah. So in regards to Dune, if you're a science fiction fan or a fan of this cast, which is easy to be, or if you want to watch what Villeneuve has done with Dune, by all means, go and see it. By all means, see it in IMAX. Like we did,
please.
If you can. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful film. It's great to watch. Like I said, my issues with the pacing are worse than yours. I said, my other chief complaint is you said that it's like a Hamlet thing. It's like, yeah, because everyone's the only person like for all the camp in the Lynch version, everyone felt alive. And in this film, I feel like the only person that's actually kind of enjoying himself is Jason Momoa. Everyone else is just very, they're very dead. They were very flat to me. And I know the story, and I just felt like the only person that is legitimately kind of like embracing what's happening is Jason Momoa. So it was just weird for me that way. I was like, I need more animation. I mean, yes, Jürgen Prochnow as Duke Leto was not a terribly emotive man in that film, but he carries a gravitas that Oscar Isaac does not yet possess. So that the staid and reserved Duke Leto is kind of acceptable, but you know, Gurney Halleck, it should be a little more animated, and he's not as animated as I would like. Brolin is almost just kind of mean and dour the whole time, as Gurney Halleck. It's just, I don't know. It's just weird. And then, Stellan Skarsgård is, Baron Harkonnen. And I'm still going to say Harkonnen because that's how I got it. Even though they're saying Harkonnen in this, he's so great, and I love the visuals on all of Giedi Prime and the Harkonnens. They're less campy than the originals, than Lynch's versions, I should say. So that's cool, but there wasn't enough of that. There wasn't enough life in this movie in terms of the cast. And it's like, this cast is so good. It's just like, why is it not? Why am I not feeling better about that? Like I said, it's great. Go and watch it. I encourage people to go watch it if you're fans. I don't know if I'm just being too hard on it, which is why I'm debating going to see it again to determine if I'm just being too hard on it. I just have to find the time to drive all the way down there. But
for me though, it's I can't really judge it until I know what the whole looks like.
Right.
And to a certain degree, that's why Lord of the Rings didn't win an Oscar until it was finished.
Right.
Because Return of the King, great movie, but don't think that Oscar was given really just to that film.
No, that was given to that 12 hours.
Yes, that Oscar was, which really might be more impressive if you really want to think about it. It's not easy to make 12 hours of riveting film, even when you have great material.
Right.
We see it all the time where people, what for whatever reason, they can't.
Right.
Or they don't. I mean, Hobbit, same guy made Hobbit. Anyway.
Yeah.
But
move along.
Anyway, I don't feel like I've seen the whole thing. And so I almost feel like I can't just, that I can't give it a review
as an absolute
at this point. Sure.
Yeah, because we're
I may hate where they take it from here.
That is also true.
So, or I may love it. But from a writing perspective, I think that the first act of these sort of stories is always hard.
Yeah,
because you do have to build so much, and there is politics involved here. So you have to set the stage for the politics, and then you have to have the religious aspect, and you have to have. I mean, there's just so many different things that are going on in this. I think that's why it takes time.
Yeah,
to explain all those things, and so we'll see.
There you go. That is Dune. It opens this Friday, a week from now, Friday the 22nd of October. I forgot the day. Today it was Friday. Who knew? So we're both going to tell you to check it out, and we'll leave it at that. Check it out. Definitely an IMAX if you have IMAX around you.
Definitely see it on the biggest screen.
Biggest screen you can.
I just don't think there's so much here that you'd miss on a small TV.
You really would. So,
or even a big TV.
Yeah, or even a big TV. So there you go. That is Dune, October 22nd, from director Denis Villeneuve, whom we love. So stay tuned. We've got more films coming out. We got Halloween Kills, which opened today, which we'll be talking about. We've got two or three movies next week. Another film, at least one the week after that. I've still got some stuff I got to get to. Don't worry about that. But Ryan and I will be back. They are giving us all the movies we can handle, really, at this point. And then some, if you're Ryan. So, stay tuned for those. We'll be back. Don't forget to like us. Follow us on social media at VS Movie Podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe. That would be great, too. Till we see you again, I am Mark. That is Ryan. Bye, Ryan.
See you guys.
And we will talk to you all later.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.